The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster by, good afternoon. On the slope down to TT. All going to be happening this weekend. The big start. And we'll see what we'll be missing for nearly 3 years. Lots of guests over, lots of visitors. Enjoying Manx hospitality and luxuriating in the city of Douglas as well. What do you think about the carbon neutral TT, by the way? We'll find out more about that later. But we've talked over the past few weeks about geothermal, the fact that from experts who say that the Isle of Man might be able to tap into the heat believed to exist beneath rocks beneath the Isle of Man. The idea of using geothermal energy is said to be a non-starter by other people. So we have two opinions. Some people who say, go ahead. Other people say, don't bother. Well, as the dispute goes on, Britain's first commercially run geothermal plant is about to go on stream in Cornwall. And the development and project geologist at it's the South Downs project, and the development and project geologist is Hazel Farndale. And she spoke to Barry Redfern, producer of Man in Line, and reckons it's the first of many in the British Isles, and the Isle of Man could, she thinks, benefit from this new technology.
Selling your home can be a battle, but with a new £750 fixed fee for properties up to £350,000, it's a battle. CG Red will help you win. We will sell them on the beachfront, in the fields and in the streets, and charge just £750. Because when it comes to giving you the best possible deal, we will never surrender.
Sell your home for just £750 with CG Red. Visit cgred.im.
Never was so much saved by so many than with CG Red.
Here's Hazel Farndale.
What we've done here at United Downs is we've drilled two wells. We've drilled a deep production well down to more than 5 kilometres depth and a shallower injection well, and that's down to about 2.5 kilometres depth. And from that, we're going to be generating the UK's first geothermal power.
You say you drill down, but the hot water just simply comes straight up, does it, or what?
The hot water is down there, yes. So we've targeted a natural fracture zone in the granite that's down here, and that fracture zone allows the water to flow freely down at that 5 kilometre depth. We have to pump it to the surface. So what we do is we lower a pump down about 1 kilometre down into our production well. We pump the fluid to the surface, and we can then use it at the surface to heat a secondary fluid. And it's actually that secondary fluid that turns to steam and can turn a turbine, and that's what generates electricity. In theory, anywhere in the world could do geothermal. It's all to do with the costs involved and the technical know-how, essentially.
Anywhere in the world? So what about the Isle of Man?
A very good question. Yes, I see no reason, in theory, why the Isle of Man couldn't harness its geothermal power. You'd have to do studies into where would be best to locate it. But essentially, if you can drill down deep enough and get the temperatures you need, there are ways to extract that power.
Well, we've been told the island by some people that the island doesn't have aquifers. Apparently, these are porous rocks containing hot water.
Correct, yeah.
So if we don't have aquifers, we can't do it.
Well, there's new technology being trialled all over the world. I can think of a project in Canada at the moment where what they're doing is they're actually drilling two wells separated by a few kilometres distance, drilling them vertically down and then creating their own aquifer in between them. So they're drilling horizontally across, and that can then absorb the heat by conduction generally into the water and heat it sort of manually.
So on that basis then, will you be investigating the Isle of Man as a possibility?
Absolutely. We'd love to help. We frequently look at projects all over the UK and indeed in Europe and beyond as well. So it's all about understanding the geology, doing a deep dive into where would be the best place for it, and then coming up with a suitable technical solution.
So to sum up, yes, there could be a possibility here on the island.
Yeah, and it not only can provide you with power, but it can also provide you with thermal energy as well. So it gives you potential for heating new housing developments or even, you know, big agricultural ventures, large greenhouses, things like that, to help improve our food security as well. So it really helps you bring a sort of local energy source to an area.
Now, that's Hazel Farndale, development project geologist at this first commercially run geothermal plant in the British Isles in Cornwall. Interesting stuff. Well, some people say yes, some people say no. We'll see what happens in the future. Got some interesting figures on that in just a moment. But also, we had so many texts and emails couldn't get to yesterday with Chris Thomas, MHK, Housing and Communities Board Chairman. I'm going to just run through a few of those because some people made really good points about housing yesterday. Those to come. But also the story about the carbon neutral TT. The Department for Enterprise has announced this year's festival will be carbon neutral because they're going to be offsetting emissions. Dr. Allinson, MHK, the Enterprise Minister, explains it.
As with many other motorsports now, we're looking at sustainability as a core part of what everything we do. Now, in the future, that might mean biofuels, but at the moment, it means offsetting. And what we've done is look back to 2019, calculated not only the carbon emissions from the riders and the racing, but also the visitors who come over. We've estimated that at around about 5,000 tonnes of CO2. We're going to be offsetting that through a whole series of schemes which have been international verified. On top of that, we're also looking at how we can run the races in a more sustainable way. What we've done is really partner with an international global company who will be providing a range of different schemes. What we're doing is going to be calculating the total emissions for this year's racing based on the figures of visitors who are coming in, the number of races, the amount of fuel we use, and then use them to offset those in the right way. So we're actually putting money back into the environment by sponsoring NGOs and community projects around the world to actually offset what we do on Ireland.
Realistically, moving into a more eco-conscious world and future, is the TT sustainable?
Absolutely. We've had TT Zero in the past. We're pausing it this year because actually the numbers of competitors coming in was decreasing. And what we'd like to do is work with industry to see how they can supply electric bikes, perhaps even hydrogen-powered bikes that we can race as we do other bikes.
Well, if you want to get in touch regarding this carbon, and incidentally, industry jargon, state away, carbon neutral, carbon offsetting. What's the difference? Carbon neutral, carbon offsetting. On the phone, 66 13 68, text 166 177, same for WhatsApp, but stick 07624 in the front. Or you can email studio@manxradio.com. So is carbon offsetting the same as being carbon neutral? Now, a businessman on the Isle of Man with an interesting climate is John Curtis, and he spoke to Manx Radio's Simon Richardson. He doesn't think that this approach is in line with our climate change laws. Laws.
According to the Climate Change Act, off-island emissions are not permitted as valid offsets for carbon emissions on the island. So I think the first thing is to try and seek clarification on that, because it's quite clear. I have a copy of the Climate Change Act here, and I can quote from it if necessary. But I think it's quite clear what the intention was by Tynwald in that respect. It appears that the group called Positive are going to offset the emissions. They've been given this right to do so. Although it's a little bit strange, because I've looked at Positive. They don't have any net zero programme of their own. They don't have any published sustainability report of their own. In fact, they don't seem to have anything to do with net zero whatsoever.
That's John Curtis. Do you welcome this carbon offset? Are you going to be proud to parade your carbon neutral qualifications, your badge of carbon neutrality to people who ever ask about the TT? What do you think of all this? So get in touch. Just a message in front. I was going to get some messages from yesterday. One said, I'd like to ask Chris Thomas When does the rent control legislation ever get used, and when has a tenant ever successfully appealed their private rent? People have to suck it up and pay the going rate, said that correspondent yesterday. If you've ever appealed a rent, by the way, then do get in touch. Howard's on Man in Line now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. No, just going back to your carbon neutral there for a second. A couple of 3 weeks ago, the programme on Sunday evening, Country File, they were all on about carbon neutral and said that carbon dioxide saving. But one of them was on, and he had a multi-million pound business planting trees. And the number of adverts you see on the TV, we have planted 100,000 trees. We have done this, we have done that, and that is a smoke and mirrors version of the carbon neutral. They're still throwing, and the TT will still throw out what they quote as 5,000 ton. But what is it going to cost them financially to buy the credits to allow it to be called? And that's all it will be, because those emissions are still going. I'm not against it. I love the TT. Don't get me wrong on that one. But those emissions are still going to be out there, but you're buying a carbon neutral, and this is big business now. This is the a new side to the carbon problem, carbon dioxide problem. These business people are putting tens of millions of pounds into areas of marsh. They'll buy the peatlands, the marshes, and everything like this, and they're not going to do anything with it. They're just going to take money off you. So what does the Manx government, what are they paying? That's never been mentioned, to become carbon neutral for the TT.
And I think the point you make is important, Howard, is that the back of all this, the green agenda, sustainability, a better world that we're promised, at the back of all this, there are people, companies, businesses, making millions. Now, we're not against that. We live in a capitalist society. But, you know, you need to call it what it is.
Yes, yes. Well, the likes of, my pension is with a private company, although I do get a state pension, but I paid in for years into a private pension. Anyway, my pension funds are largely invested in various companies that are indirectly or directly producing carbon dioxide. So to do away with those, and not only my pension, but millions of other people, their pensions could be severely restricted, because the funds from these big companies were going into pension funds, but now they go into private enterprise with a carbon neutral. Somebody, as I say, buy up a big marshland somewhere, and do absolutely nothing with it except to claim it's going to absorb all the carbon dioxide that these other companies are buying. And this chap was quite adamant about it, and he was quite open about it on Country File. It was about, within the last month anyway, that it is a business enterprise, and that's what they're doing. But it's smoke and mirrors. And the Manx government has said, trying to improve their credentials on the TT, saying it's going to be carbon neutral, but at what cost? And that cost is going to fall again on the taxpayer.
Okay, well, we've certainly asked for more information. We'd like to talk to the people behind Positive, the company that are doing it, and as soon as we do get a word from them, yeah, they'll be on the air, Howard.
But there's one other thing there, and I think it was a chap from Ramsey, the MHK, down if I can think of his name now, but he said it's strange that so many people are leaving government. Well, it worries me in a sense, because the Isle of Man government for a long time called themselves IOM PLC, and it was a company as far as they were concerned. They were run as a business. But if a lot of the top men and women in this particular company were leaving, you would wonder why. And do we have a tsunami of disasters heading towards the Isle of Man? And these hierarchy in the government have seen this coming and a jumping ship before the crash happens.
Well, it may be, Howard, that they've had a gutful. I mean, they've had 2 years of lockdown, like a lot of us. And you know, when something like that comes to an end, you take stock, you have a think. Some people may just think, you know, I've had enough, I'm off.
Yes, but these people have been running the country or running the island, and you can only blame themselves, because it's within the civil service that this has happened, and it's within the civil service that they're leaving, and they're the top people, the top earners, who should have been in charge of what was going on. And as David Ashford said, I'm advised, I cannot dictate to the terms, but these people are there to advise the ministers, who in some cases have only just been made minister in their first term of office. So they are not up and running, but the people that are leaving now, and these are senior members of the civil service, and it concerns me that, as I say, I hope there's not a tsunami waiting out there heading towards the Isle of Man.
Okay, all right, thanks, Howard.
Take care, bye now.
Okay, Graham's with us on Man in Line 9. Hi, Graham.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, Graham, go ahead.
Yes, it was just a follow-up to our previous conversations about the possibility of geothermal energy on the island.
Oh, Graham Fox-Hume. Hi, Graham.
Yes, hello. my point was, after the comments by Hazel, my suggestion would be that if we are going to access this, that a well drilled down... two wells you need, of course, one to send the water down and one to get it back. And then it's circulated between the two wells, of course, to collect the heat. In the case of the Cornwall granites, of course, the water actually circulates through the rock itself, through a fault zone. My point would be, what would be the possibility of actually having a cased connection between the two wells, a steel casing, which would... of course, mean that there was no nasty stuff coming up with the with the water, and also, but basically, would that be adequate to collect the heat? That was my point. You know, we would have to drill deep here, I must admit, because the granites are not that hot. But nonetheless, modern drilling technology, all things are possible.
So I think last time was 5 kilometres mentioned.
Yes, yes. Yes, but that's easy. I mean, we can drill to 13 kilometres nowadays.
My word. Well, the sooner we get something, some experts to come and check, I think the better, because this again, sounds like a good idea, but we don't quite know whether it's applicable.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I mean, for me, it's conjecture indeed. But the point being, of course, that this would help, along with Kroger's gas and oil prospects, it would make the island totally energy independent, which I think is a huge bonus.
And possibly an exporter.
Even that too. Yes, with the interconnector, it could go both ways.
Okay, all right, appreciate that, Graham. Thanks for calling.
No, you're welcome.
All right, 24 minutes past 12 on Manx Radio. Here's a message in from Timothy, who just said, I'm just raising this case about last Sunday's flight on the Man in Line. I was on the flight with my family. At takeoff from Gatwick, the EasyJet pilot stated there was only a 50% chance of landing due to fog. On getting to the island, he decided he couldn't land and diverted to Manchester, where we spent 3 hours on the tarmac. The pilot then said he'd spoken to EasyJet operations. They'd confirmed that the best way forward was to fly back to Gatwick, and they put us in a hotel overnight and rebook the flight on the Monday. Just went to the customer services desk at Gatwick. Getting to Gatwick, everyone found there's no EasyJet customer service desk there. The staff there knew nothing about hotels. There was no way you could get a flight until Tuesday or Wednesday. I was advised to get our own hotel and had to book a flight from Bristol the next day. Imagine my surprise when we finally got home and EasyJet had sent an email on Sunday night stating they couldn't be held responsible for what happened and would not pay any compensation. You got anything to compare to that? Then please get in touch. A former Flybe and Manx Airlines pilot believes the top priority for the new airport director at Ronald's Way, Mr. Cobb, should be reducing the number of cancelled flights due to poor visibility. Steve Brightson claims the downgrading of the lighting system from intermediate to basic during runway improvements in 2010 was a mistake, causing the visual approach requirement to increase. Steve Brightson spoke to Manx Radio's Simon Richardson, and he said that changes are needed to allow as many flights as possible.
The question has been asked, what's the best we can do with what we've got? I know that for a fact. I've seen the report that came back from that. And the answer is, you've got what you've got. There's nothing you can do unless you actually improve things.
We've got a new airport director coming into post soon. What in the short term would you advise if you were in that position to make an immediate improvement to the situation?
I noticed that the new gentleman is coming down from the Highlands and Ireland, so I really hope that he appreciates the importance of an airport regarding, so far as connectivity is concerned, for remote communities. Because it is really, really important that we have this airport functioning so that whenever and as often as possible we can get on and off this island, irrespective of how poor the visibility is. I mean, there's going to be times when the visibility is so poor that even with the best facilities in the world, we're not going to be able to operate. If he comes here with that view that, right, how can we turn this airport into that vital link, that should be the top of his list. Don't worry about painting the terminal, as far as I'm concerned. As I've said elsewhere, I'd be more than happy to board an airplane out of a cow shed if I knew that it could depart and come back safely, because the facilities on the airfield itself would allow that to happen. That's surely got to be the priority.
So, anything that you can bring to the table regarding that, regarding cancelled flights? And is it true that it was because of the downgrading of the lighting system during runway improvements in 2010? Again, something that the new airport director is going to get on top of. There's a note in from Alan, and just said, Andy, who's running the Isle of Man? Is it true the current acting roles, there's an acting chief secretary, an acting attorney general, an acting chief exec of treasury, an acting chief exec of health, an acting chief exec of enterprise, an acting chief exec of infrastructure, an acting chief exec of DEFA? We have no new chief fire officer. The chief constable retires in September and we don't have one. Who's running the Isle of Man? Well, those acting people, I would imagine. And we still do have a chief constable. Gary Roberts is still there and still doing his job. John's with us now on Man in Line. Hi, John.
Oh, first of all, wouldn't you? Oh, I was just hearing about this this tax on the TT. Because that's what these carbon things are. It's a tax which is being imposed on anyone and everyone to keep this so-called climate change going. Remember, in the Middle Ages, the all-powerful church there told people that they were going to spend time in purgatory for their sins. However, if they paid the church lots of money, then they would issue them indulgences and they would go straight to the kingdom of heaven. We know that's a complete scam. And we now have the modern version. We've been terrified into believing that the benign trace gas carbon dioxide, which is, of course, essential for life on Earth, because plants use it for photosynthesis. Without carbon dioxide, plants die. And the rise in carbon dioxide over the last few decades has seen plants, crops, and everything green flourishing all over the world.
So, would you seriously compare the green agenda to religion?
That's the way it's going. Oh, that's the way it's gone. You're not allowed to disagree with it. People who do disagree lose their jobs and all that sort of thing. And then the joy of it is that despite strenuous efforts by the powers that be, they never actually prove that man-generated carbon dioxide has actually affected the climate. It could just as well be due to natural causes. So this is all political, and lots of people are making lots of money out of it. And of course, it's Joe Muggins in the street who's paying for it. And the other politicians, the media, they're all been they're all singing from the same tune, and there's you know, whatever political party you want to vote for, they've all got the same policy. It's a tax, and fundamentally it's a scam, just like the indulgences in the Middle Ages.
So is there any part of the green agenda that you agree with, John?
Let's use energy more efficiently. Let's reduce waste. There's a great many things we can do to minimise our energy consumption and all that sort of thing. But that's a completely different concept to thinking that we can change the climate, or that the extremely benign climate change, which has been largely beneficial, is in any way a threat.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we've talked about this a few times in the past, so I'm just wondering where you think we go from here, because the trajectory is only one way at the moment, John.
Yes, say no opposition is tolerated.
I mean, just look for example at the general election in Australia in the past few days, and Mr. Morrison is out on his ear, and the new administration in Australia stated the climate deniers' day is over.
But they can't get away from the facts. You can't get away from the figures. You can't get away from the records, which are freely accessible for anybody with an internet connection and a modest knowledge spreadsheets, which is what I've done myself, or many other people in the world do as well. But it is politically driven. World Economic Forum is one, you know, the world elites are determined. This is one way to get complete control over world affairs. And of course, the World Health Organization is, as another UN operation, is also wanting to be given ultimate authority on pandemics, for instance, and what they want to be able to override national governments, whether it comes to lockdowns or in vaccinations and this sort of thing. It is all going the same way, and people should realize how they're being used with this endless propaganda.
Okay. All right, John, we appreciate that. Come back soon, okay?
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for calling today. A message in also about the cost of geothermal. Fred dropped me a note in and just said, the average cost of UK onshore wind farm in 2019 was £1.69 million per megawatt. Well, perhaps it's gone up a bit since then to 2022. Now, we don't have the cost of what United Downs is happening in Cornwall, but there's a relative comparison from what's happening in the United States regarding geothermal. Geothermal per installed megawatt is around double that of an onshore wind farm. And get this, an onshore wind farm in 2019 was £1.69 million per megawatt. So, can we apply that to the British Isles? Well, it's a relative comparison, not an absolute comparison. So geothermal per installed megawatt is double of an onshore wind farm. So let's say a British geothermal power plant will be, let's say, less than £4 million per megawatt. So at first it would seem, says Fred, that wind is cheaper, but that's only because you're looking at cost per installed megawatt. The geothermal plant will be on stream for at least 90% of the time, probably closer to 100%. Wind farm, as we've mentioned in the past, can vary from 1 in 4 days, 25%, sometimes as low as 15%. So then, says Fred, if you calculate on a megawatt hour basis, you get the following based on 8,760 hours in a year. Wind The cost per megawatt, 8,760 times 0.15, 1,314 hours for a cost of 2 million. The cost per megawatt is £1,522 per megawatt hour. Geothermal, 8,760 times 0.9, i.e. 90%, 7,884 hours for £4 million. The cost per megawatt is £507 per megawatt hour. A third of the cost of wind power, purely because wind isn't 100% reliable, whereas geothermal, between 90 and 100%. So we're getting some more figures. The figures for geothermal versus wind power. Do you remember A.D. Cowan was on from the Met Office on Monday and said the best place for a wind farm for the Isle of Man, southwest or west, because of the prevailing southwesterly wind whipping up from the Falklands. Not literally, but in that direction. So perhaps the Climate Change Board on the Isle of Man will be coming to some conclusions. We'll be talking to Daphne Kane of the Climate Change Board in the next few weeks on Man in Line.
Corkill, 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 Corkill. Corkill removals and storage today. Loads big and small day after day. We'll help you move, we'll help you pack. With a local or global, we've got the knack. So give us a cheer. Yay! Your movers are here. They do it right.
As well as moving locally, nationally or internationally, we have storage solutions from as little as £12 per week.
Call 675-495. We'll get your load delivered on time. You can be sure we'll get the job done. Click corkillremovals.com.
Typhoon House, happily working to keep you working, whether from home or the office. We can keep your printer or copier fleet running in tip-top condition, whether there's a problem or simply making sure you don't run out of toner. Typhoon House also supply and install new devices, which are more efficient and cost-effective for you and your business. Call 661-331 or email typhoon@typhoonhouse.im. Typhoon House.
It's finally time for the riders to start their engines for the 2022 Isle of Man TT. At Shaw, we've been the official telecommunications partner of the races since 2007, and we're proud to play our part in the greatest motorsporting event in the world. Wherever you sit for the Isle of Man TT, you'll have great coverage from Shaw's ultra-fast network. So every spine-tingling, knee-scraping, jaw-dropping moment could be shared quicker than ever. To find out more, go to shaw.com.
Get more from Shaw.
This evening at 6, Fiona McArdle will be here with Jacques Lay.
Speed and Light, paint a journey around the world-famous TT course.
Hopefully somebody will buy something, or I'll have a lot of pictures hanging in the house.
The Big Splash Art Trail.
We've got some really exciting stuff on the trail this year.
And books, the new publication by Paul Quayle.
That world and the night sky particularly was an inspiration.
That's this evening at 6 o'clock. Join Fiona McArdle for Jacques Lay.
Man in Line with Andy Wint.
21 minutes ahead of one. Hi, Joan.
Hello.
What happened? Hello. What happened, Joan?
Well, we were on holiday in the Isle of Man 2 weeks ago, and we parked on the Loch Prom, and as, of course, you have to put your timer up. As we left it, we forgot to. But as we got back to the car, we got back in the car, was driving along, and realised there was something on our windscreen, and when we looked at it, some very kind person had actually put a timer under our windscreen wiper with the right time that we parked the car, so we didn't get a fine.
Saved you £60, Joan.
Yes, we realised that. So we haven't had chance since we've come home to actually phone you and thank you, but whoever it is, we're just wanting to say a really big thank you.
All right. So, whereabouts are you, Joan?
We're in Preston.
Okay. And what car? I mean, what colour car was it? What was it?
A silver. Silver Verso.
Okay. So the and what day was that? Was it last week, you say? A couple of weeks ago?
I can't remember the exact date. We came home 2 weeks ago today. It was about the 10th of May, something like that.
Fantastic. What did you spend the £60 you didn't get fined on, Joan?
We haven't spent that yet, but yes. Anyway, just a big thank you to whoever it was.
Did you have a good time while you were here, Joan?
Oh, yes. We're off and over on the Isle of Man, and we knew we should have put a timer on. We just forgot that time. So just a big thank you to you all.
All right. Thanks for calling, Joan.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Appreciate it. 20 to 1 on Manx Radio. Yes, the new airport director's Gary Cobb, COBB, currently based at Inverness Airport as chief operating officer for the Highlands and Islands Airport Limited. Before that, he was head of airfield planning at Gatwick Airport. Emily Kerfey, the interim chief exec, the acting chief exec of infrastructure, is welcoming him to the Isle of Man. He starts in August. And yes, it's true. Everybody's asking, is it true about the purple helmets? Yes, last appearance on Mad Sunday, the 5th of June. They're going to be at Quarterbridge in the morning and then off to Peel for the last show of all time, 1:30. On Mad Sunday. So if you want to see the spectacle, can you believe the purple helmets will be disbanding? No more purple helmets. What are we going to do? Here's a message in. All the lieutenant governors have always loved the purple helmets. Don't ask me why, they just do. DNS said, listening to people talking about the TT as an island, we can no longer afford to run the TT. I think it's daft to assume the Isle of Man benefits from the TT. It costs the government, and ultimately us, a lot to set up the course and the bits associated with it. Well, the government's always maintained that there is a trickle-down effect to all the people who benefit from the TT. Obviously, they have to pay a lot in prize money. Infrastructure has to spend an awful lot of money. But you take a look now at all the playing fields that have got all the tents on, the campsites around the Isle of Man. Old Boys have got one on Blackberry Lane. Then there's Douglas Rugby Club, Ballaclone and Ramsey have got them, St John's. All the money that goes into places like that, all the homestay money that goes into everybody paying for home improvements and also for the holidays with tax-free stuff through homestay. The government maintains that the TT has a positive financial effect to the economy of the Isle of Man. But your opinion is, DNS, that it doesn't, and that's your opinion. There's one other calculation to be added. It says Des, windmills only last 25 years, then have to be replaced and disposed of. More cost. And a message in from Paddy, who just said, you were talking also about Southampton and the fact they had a geothermal one in Southampton. So how can the one in Cornwall be the first? Well, the one in Southampton is an urban heating project. They were going for geothermal in Southampton, I think it was the 1980s, and decided that either it wasn't good enough or robust enough. I can't remember the reason for it. But that system, the geothermal system they've got in Southampton, has been heating residential homes since the 1980s. Over 40 years. We'll find out more about that as we get closer to it. Here's Betty on Man in Line. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Andy. I hope you're well.
Terrific, thank you.
I'd just like to say in defence of David Ashcroft. Now, first of all, I will have to tell you that I don't know David Ashcroft. I've never met him, but I have spoken to him on the phone. And I think he seems like a very decent man, and he's always very willing to listen to his constituents. And I just feel that perhaps Chris Thomas has a holier-than-thou attitude and shouldn't attack David Ashcroft so much.
I think it's fair to say, though, Betty, there's no love lost in politics, is there?
No, but I think it's being a bit vindictive to attack him. And I just feel he doesn't seem like the sort of person who would go around being bossy and unpleasant to people. I could be wrong, but that's how it seems to me.
Okay, well, we appreciate that. And Betty, I have to tell you that within the next 3 weeks or so, David Ashford will be on Man in Line.
Oh, right.
So you can tell him yourself.
I should have said Ashford. Sorry.
It's one of those days today, Betty, isn't it?
Right.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thank you.
Good to hear from you. It's 12:45.
This is my last will and testament. To my family, I leave years of financial headaches, large legal bills, and the prospect of having to sell our home to pay for it all.
Is that the legacy you choose to leave? Without a proper will and thorough planning, it could happen. Mann Benham Advocates, experiencing wills, probate and estate planning with a friendly service to make sure the future of your loved ones are secure. Don't put it off. Call 639 350 for your free initial consultation with Mann Benham. Here for you.
There's only one name you need when it comes to scrap. Castaigne Scrap Metal. Castaigne will scrap all metal and they're licensed to scrap all batteries, including dry cell and lead acid batteries. To get the best prices of copper, lead, aluminium, catalytic converters, brass and more, remember one name, Castaigne Scrap Metal. Castaigne Scrap Metal. Remember one number, 801337. 801337. Castaigne Scrap Metal.
Every drop is precious. Water. So easy to take it for granted, isn't it? Our reservoirs supply the needs of our island, but with the effects of climate change, that's becoming more challenging every year. Manx water is the only water we have, so we need to make every drop count by using it wisely, at home, in the garden, and in general. Visit manxutilities.im to find out how you can begin smarter living to lower energy bills and reduce your impact on our island environment.
Discover why visitors return time after time to the Welbeck Hotel, fabulously located near Douglas Seafront. Whether enjoying our fine dining for a special occasion, bringing the family for a delicious Sunday lunch, enjoying coffee and a drink with friends, or staying overnight in our comfortable rooms, you'll never be disappointed at the highly rated Welbeck Hotel. Come and experience our excellent food and superb service for yourself. Book today. Call the Welbeck on 675 663 or visit welbeckhotel.com.
Manx Radio's Hidden Heroes with ShopRite.
Tune in to 1 to 3 tomorrow to hear another hidden hero revealed here on Manx Radio. We'll be surprising someone wonderful who's gone above and beyond for their local community. And check our Facebook and YouTube pages after the show to find the video of the moment we surprise them with a £100 voucher from our friends at ShopRite. It's all happening tomorrow on 1 to 3 here on Manx Radio, the nation station. And be sure to nominate your hidden hero. You'll find the form under the competitions tab at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And thank you, Wendy. She said, didn't that woman from Human Resources stand down as well? That's right. The Executive Director of Human Resources left with immediate effect earlier on this week. That's Claire Coney. Apparently, there's going to be a review of OHR, the Office of Human Resources. Government loves an acronym, doesn't it? That seeks to ensure the highest standards of professional practice are maintained. Claire Coney had worked for the government since 2003, holding a range of HR leadership positions. She was promoted to exec director of OHR last year, but she's gone as well. There are people left. Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Something you said a little bit earlier just caught my attention when you were saying we live in a capitalist society. However, you've got to think about wind power and solar, etc., getting massive subsidies from us. So if you take real capitalism, say the dawn of the car in the late 1800s, early 1900s, you had a choice. You had steam initially and the very first electric cars. You had petrol and diesel. And overall, people chose the one that gave you the range, didn't have all the compromises of hand starting and waiting for a steam engine to start or all those type of things. So geothermal, for example, is not going to get anywhere near the huge subsidies, say, for example, Walney Wind Farm across has had. So the prices they're actually saying, oh, this is the cost of it. Is it actually? Because if you take away the subsidies, would they be able to do it? I very much doubt it.
And nobody's quite got to the bottom of the subsidies, the amount of subsidies that are available. If you figure in also the tax breaks that are given to the companies that do it as well as the actual. I mean, the EU used to subsidise. That's why Denmark's got so many. I take your point about that. I mean, technically speaking, of course, we lived in a mixed economy, but I mean, the people at ShopRite will tell you it's a capitalist society and you have to pay. But I take your point.
Yeah, I mean, for example, I mean, you know, we're sort of being told, right, you'll have to have an electric car and they're going to stop production of internal combustion engine cars by 2030. Right, okay. How is that going to, I mean, we've had this conversation a few times. How is that going to work if you live in a flat in a large city and you don't know where you're going to park next? Are they going to dig up every single pavement in the whole of London and put in charging points for everybody?
And point one, Julian, there isn't enough lithium or cadmium in the entire world for everybody to have a battery.
Yeah, and where they're going to have to dig to get that to keep up for the nearer future are in wilderness areas. So how are we going to be looking for planning approval to dig out forests in wherever to get the lithium out? You know, there's a lot of questions here. This is a loaded dice for wind and solar. And of course, the question also is, are we going through a huge change in the climate? I mean, Hurricane Katrina is the one that everyone thinks about because that's the last one that made proper landfall in the US. Well, that was in 2005. So how long ago was that? I mean, in the grand
scheme, incidentally, they've had a hurricane since then, and Hurricane Katrina caused the problems in New Orleans because the levees didn't work.
Well, that's what you get for living near the coast.
I mean, they've repaired a lot of the levees, and the last hurricane didn't affect New Orleans half as badly.
Yeah, I mean, somebody mentioned on... Did you mention that about Harlech Castle?
Yes.
In Wales. I mean, if you actually look and see... I mean, they've got the steps to a little dock. That is 4,400 feet away from the coast now. I mean, it's 0.8 of a mile away from the nearest sea. How does that work?
All right. Okay. Thanks, Julian. We appreciate it.
Thanks, then. Cheers. Bye.
All right. Take minutes before one on Manx Radio. The number of monkeypox cases in the British Isles is prompting a warning for people on the Isle of Man. There have been no cases of monkeypox on the Isle of Man. The risk remains low to the general public. People, that's you, are being asked to be aware of the symptoms. The advice from Public Health Isle of Man is to be alert to any unusual rashes, lesions, or any part of your body, especially your genitalia. The advice is to contact the Isle of Man GUM, the Genito-Urinary Medicine Sexual Health Clinic, if you have concerns. Monkeypox is viral, usually associated with travel to West Africa, spread by very close contact with somebody who has monkeypox. Now, it's usually a mild self-limiting illness, meaning that most cases it resolves itself without treatment, and most people recover within a few weeks. But the main symptoms are unusual rashes or lesions on the body, such as the face or the genital area, fever, muscle aches, chills and exhaustion, headaches, and the old favourite, swollen lymph nodes. So if you think you have monkeypox symptoms, however mild, call your GP or call a sexual health clinic immediately. Your call will be treated sensitively and confidentially. You must avoid close personal or sexual contact with others until you know that it is not monkeypox. Now, the head of health protection at Public Health Isle of Man, Glenn Blacker, says they're monitoring the situation closely. There have been over 50 cases of monkeypox in the UK, and we're not aware of anything on the Isle of Man to date. But it has to be noticed that there will be tens of thousands of extra people on the Isle of Man in the next 3 weeks or so. So you're advised to take note of your own personal health. The sexual health clinic number is 650710. That's 650710. More messages in the UK, says G, they're going to levy a windfall tax on energy companies. The companies have said this will cause prices to rise. And of course, the Isle of Man won't get any windfall cash, but we will get the increases. What will we do then? A windfall tax, perhaps? Here's a note in from Josie, and she says, you're talking about lithium and cadmium. And she said, I note that the Isle of Man Green Party don't want Kroger to get a license to possibly drill for gas off Mackled. However, if they suddenly found out that the Foxdale Deads or Laxey suddenly contain cadmium or lithium, would the Green Party oppose opening a mine, reopening Laxey Mine or the Foxdale Deads or Ballajora, anywhere else like that, if it was suddenly found that lithium was under the Isle of Man? Lots of texts in today. Just a small correction, by the way. The earlier police announcement about offences during TT, marshals are no longer special constables. Here's a message in, and lots of them in today, and still some more about housing from yesterday. This one says, are the Red Arrows coming over this year? Yes, they are. Actually, says Helen, the last Purple Helmet show is the Laxey Ducks on the 20th of August. Don't panic. Do you think the Purple Helmets really, really are going to retire? Do you think they've got it in them to never, ever don those brown Macs ever again? Sharon said, Andy, regarding airport and flights unable to land during to fog, before, years ago, the planes could land at Jerby. Shame the powers that be closed Jerby. Well, you couldn't land there now, could you, really, at the moment? There's a prison at one end. That would be a bit of a risk, wouldn't it? And again, Purple Helmets are doing several shows, says Paul Q, starting with Mad Sunday. So, yeah, the last one is the Laxey Duck. Race.
The nation station, Manx Radio.
Dave said, Andy, the sands have shifted by that castle built up over time. This is Harlech Castle, the one we're talking about, that's now hundreds of yards inland. This is Frank who says, Andy, why don't you have one of those Man in Line polls about the lithium mine, the great Laxey lithium mine, or the cadmium mine in Foxborough? That would be an interesting poll. It'd be an interesting question. If you suddenly found lithium and cadmium in the Isle of Man, would they allow drilling for lithium cadmium for the batteries for electric cars? Have a think about it. Another open line back tomorrow. The last open line before TT. Thanks to Barry Redfern producing today.
WI.